Like, I walked over the, went to the bathroom in between the break. I saw somebody playing with one of the puppies that they have up for adoption.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's about, like, seven people here.
Man. Yeah.
We outworked Shador Sanders today, G. Bush.
Yeah, ain't nobody out here. I mean, but it is crazy hot, though. Like, why?
Crazy hot. Well, that's the thing. So they had a shortened practice today, and they didn't make it as long. And it's like, well, why did they not make it as long? And Coach Riz was on earlier with us, Odyssey Rewind. Go back and check that out. It's like, why did they make it not as long? It's like, well, it was really hot out today.
Yeah.
And, like, they didn't want to deal with that. So tomorrow they're probably going to go a little bit harder, and they'll make sure that they do a little bit more. And it's like, well, all right.
Put them pads on, and tomorrow's going to be crazy. The pads will come back on. They will be looking around. And here's the thing, too. It isn't the same as it is. I remember, like, going. I keep expecting it to be 2-a-days, and now I'm really starting to want to go back and get a lawyer and do a class action lawsuit.
Oh yeah, why? Did you feel robbed? Is this
I feel like it was cruelty, cruel and unusual punishment.
And now everyone is basically Camp Cupcake, even if they're actually not doing as light of work as they used to.
Like there's some things called like scientific like.
No, so you know what this is? So, okay, we have to be better for the people in front of us, right? Like I did 5 hours for the night show every night, and then they came down, and halfway through, they're like, you know what? The fifth hour doesn't make much sense. We're only going to do 4 hours, right? And so, like, do I look at it like, man, Jake Volnick never had to do that night show, never had to do 5 hours. You know, Ken did it. Nick did it. Like, everyone else did 5 hours.
Right of passage.
He didn't have to do it, and so he's got it easier in life. No. Instead, I'm like, the system was dumb. Should never have been 5 hours to begin with for a solo nighttime radio show. Shouldn't work. And so I'm glad that they fixed it. I'm glad Jake doesn't have to go through that. Like, that's how we got to look at this, right?
Or, yeah.
But you look at it like, no, I did it, and I feel robbed.
Well, no. So my parents, they had they're a little old school.
Sure.
And my parents used to say that we weren't allowed to wear any shorts to school until after Memorial Day.
Okay.
And Memorial Day was an arbitrary day. And as you grow up and being the oldest, you start learning, you start to understand about random selection. You're like, Mom, you do realize that Memorial Day does not denote that it's a safe to wear shorts. And by the way, there's no such thing as you getting sick because you had shorts on.
Yeah.
Like, you get sick because, like, there's germs and they get into your lungs and
yeah, they're like the pants you wear isn't really an indicator on that unless it's so hot or so cold.
Yeah, like unless I have a heat stroke, but that's not going to happen. And then they're like, yeah, who cares what you learned in school? That sounds nice. You're still not wearing shorts. So school ends in like June. Like, so that means Memorial Day is what? The 28th?
Sure.
So I have 6 days to wear shorts, but it's been hot since April.
Yeah.
I said, that's wild. That's wild work, Mom. When I get older, I refuse to put that type of stipend on my children.
Yeah, I like that your mom had things she stood for, though.
She stands on a lot.
It's the little things like that, though, that you're going to remember for the rest of your life.
Forever.
You know, like that's the fun little quirks that make somebody a somebody.
Right. Like, do you have anything that you're unusually keen on that you know is unfair that you're going to place on your children?
That I'm going to place on my children?
Yes.
I'll have to think about it and get back to you. What are yours?
One of them is, like, I will give it to my, like, my father. Like, shout out to him. Like, he never really stepped in too much. But, like, I had a bedtime, and then it kind of disappeared a little bit. Like, because...
Oh, yeah, I definitely had a bedtime growing up.
Sporting events, right? So, like...
Yeah.
Sporting events, my father would step up and be like, it's Monday Night Football, the Browns are never on, there's a blackout rule.
Like, which should, I like that, by the way. I like the idea that sporting events that are great should be able to go ahead and supersede the bedtime.
Like, it's like, yeah, if he fails school tomorrow, like, he's not going to fail in life.
Oh, here's one. Okay, I do have one. But this is, like, carried on tradition that my mom gave me. And so I don't know that it's, like, exclusively me.
Okay.
But, like, we got to miss opening day every year, we got to miss and go to the baseball game.
That is
every single year, and every year my mom would call into the school and be like, yep, looks like they're all under the weather. And they're like, all three of them are under the weather? Because it was my sister and me and my little brother. All three of them? We all went to the same grade school. All three of them? And then they'd be like, yep, all three of them. But like, it happened every single year that my mom, at a certain point, she didn't even have to lie anymore and be like, they're out sick for like sick reasons.
Yeah,
it was just understood. Like, yeah, Jonathan goes off for the baseball game every single year.
That
he gets
beautiful.
Opening day off, and that is what it is.
That is beautiful.
I'd like to do that with my kid.
Wow, man. I was actually sick, and it happened to be, I think I kind of faked it, but it was the first year Jacobs Field was open.
Yeah.
And I was just like, there's no way I'm going to school. I will be at the crib watching this game. They had the new uniforms. They wear the white.
Oh, not even like at the game. You're like, I gotta watch it on TV.
I just they had a brand new stadium. The Browns weren't around. It's 1999.
This was baseball, G. Bush, too, though. This was when you were playing ball and everything like that.
This is baseball.
Pretending
is my
to
life.
Be Albert Bell in your driveway.
Oh, what you mean? I was the big hurt. I was Frank Thomas.
The big skirt is what we used to call him.
Man, listen, man.
He mashed, I'm sure. And the testosterone ads have told me that he's still mashing. But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, he was the big skirt.
He was the first dude I used to tell him. I used to think I was smarter than all my friends. I'm like, yeah, you guys don't know. You know, you guys, anybody can pull the ball, but anybody who has power to the opposite field is a real home run hitter.
Oh, yeah. Can you do it both ways?
Yeah, can you guys, you know, you'll learn about it.
Now, did the Gene Honda voice transition and carry all the way to Cleveland as well, where people would do the number 35, Frank Thomas?
Everything did. Like, we had, you saw the thing where, like, we, like,
I met Frank Thomas as a kid, by the way.
Wow.
And so the idea in Chicago was that everyone knew that Frank Thomas was just a jerk. Like, that was it. Like, he just treated people poorly.
Like, it was him, Eddie Murray, and Barry Bonds were terrible.
Yeah, Albert Bell, you can throw in that list as well. Yeah. Like, there's just a certain number of baseball players. Just, everyone just kind of knew, just kind of stunk.
So it was all the black dudes.
But I met him. That's funny. I met him when I was like 12, and he was awesome.
So you
like the greatest.
And so from that point on, you're like, you can't tell me nothing about it.
From that point on, I went around refuting everyone that would try to bring that up. And like I don't know that Frank realized the amount of goodwill he did himself in being nice to a 12-year-old
right.
at one point, and it was me, that 12-year-old. But I would go around and just be like, awesome guy, the very best. Like, I think I rewrote his image in just that one encounter.
You know what's so crazy?
It was
great. Back then, baseball was so big. Like, we even memorized the way people used to bat. Like,
batting stances were everything.
Like,
and they have like that batting stance guy on TikTok. Like, he still does some of that. But kids these days don't do that for some reason.
Like,
is it because the players aren't as unique in their stances?
Like,
or we just don't find it interesting anymore?
Like the Brady Anderson.
Gary Sheffield.
Dante Bichette.
Sheffield, you wave the bat like you're doing a fan at a Japanese restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Mickey Tettleton. like listen, like all of them. Rafael Palmeiro. Everybody wanted to get to Griffey. But you couldn't get to Griffey, so the JV was Russell Branyan.
I would even do like Cal Ripken, where you rested on the shoulder, too, was another
Cal
one.
Cal Ripken was one.
That was like the lame one, though. That was the I'm going to become an accountant later in life. If you're doing Cal Ripken, you're like, you're not really trying to do any flair here.
The Ricky Henderson crouch, like you had to get like Ricky Henderson.
Oh, I was explaining to Nick the other day, because somehow Rod Beck came up. Rod Beck got buried in his Cubs uniform. But I was telling Nick that I used to put my arm over my chair at school. He used to have this big like swinging thing that he did before he pitched. I would just do that all day.
Like if there was literal people. Robin Ventura was another one.
Yeah, Ventura with the open stance.
Yeah, like
number 23.
Man, so I don't know what happened. I'm a black dude from Canton. You're a white dude from, like, Chicago or Houston. Where are you from?
Chicago.
Yeah,
I did live in Houston, though.
Yeah, right? So, see, I know two things about you.
Yeah.
and we know all the stances, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's wild. Like, how could you?
It basically means everyone our age probably knows all the stances, too.
All of them.
Is that all that means?
That means everyone
was doing it?
Everybody
But they don't do it anymore. Why don't they do it
Kevin
anymore?
Kevin Euclid.
Why is that not even a thing?
Kevin Euclid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that was as insane as it. Good pull from you, Jax. That was as insane as it gets.
Yeah.
But is that because there aren't as many cool ones? Like, oh, man, I was watching somebody the other day. And the broadcast was talking about how, like, he had such an open stance and how unique that was. And it was like, and he wasn't really, it didn't look that odd. It was barely open. And I was like, in the 90s, they would have laughed at this.
In the 90s, we had Jay Buhner. What are you talking about?
We had things like Benito Santiago throwing from one leg to try to throw runners out. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like there was all sorts of weird things.
There was all kind of,
that was part of what defined it, though.
Julio Franco. Like you know, there was... Like, you know, these are – baseball was so – I think the thing that we're missing is baseball was super diverse back then. Like, I just named you 10 black dudes that played baseball, and they're all Hall of Famers. I can't name you seven that aren't good.
Yeah, we're getting into the Lance Johnson territory.
Yeah. Like
Brian McCray.
Yeah, listen, Tim Raines – it's just guys that was there, like even Mitt guys that wasn't even that cold, like Crime Dog Fred McGriff was
crime
like,
dog, yeah.
Like he wasn't Chipper Jones or nothing.
He's still pretty great though.
He was still pretty good.
The Tom Emanski videos did a lot for his PR though.
But listen, the back-to-back-to-back AAU national championships.
Yeah. They were always on.
Our little league coach had that little bucket out there, that whole plate.
We all did. Well, that's the thing, though. I think everyone had so many shared experiences because there weren't as many things to do. I don't want to sound like I'm like 75 years old, right. But I feel like that's why I mentioned Ryan Sandberg passing away in Quick Hits, and it's like everyone watched. You watch Cubs baseball because it was on WGN. Everyone watched the Braves because it was on TBS, and those are the teams you watched outside of your main teams. But everyone had a connection with those type of players and Harry Carey and everything else.
Man, you just like.
But wait, we don't have that anymore.
Ryan Sandberg was like the like. That was like, hey, you're talking about you middle infielders. You Cal Ripken, Ryan Sandberg, give me Ozzie, give me Matt Smith.
Yeah,
I could have said Ozzie Guillen, but I remember.
I loved Ozzie Guillen too, number 13.
That's crazy because I remembered him as a player, and then he was a manager. And
well, he was our favorite type of broadcaster though.
Yeah,
unhinged.
Yeah, just
put butts in the seat. You were talking about like Perkins in between the break, Kendrick Perkins just being just a wild card of sorts, but you like that because it puts butts in the seat.
Yeah,
that's Ozzie Guillen as a broadcaster.
Back then,
unhinged human. That's great for the game.
I think that era, like they had such an intimate relationship with baseball in general. Like back then, it was all we talk about gut feelings with like John Dorsey. Those guys had gut feelings too. Like catchers used to actually be like, "Yeah, I'm calling the pitch."
But there was a lot more of that when you talked about with Bernie Kosar, though. There was a lot more of that. Like that guy just looks like a baseball player.
Yeah, just all day. Like you. Just
I think that's why people like Angel Martinez so much because he just kind of looks like a baseball player and he looks flows, like a throwback baseball player flows. In many ways.
That's why Jose Ramirez is people like him. He slides head first. He can play,
and he could play in any era.
Yeah, just.
Yep. All right, for more on this, I want to find out who Chris Jimenez used as his batting stances as a kid, because you know he did. He had to have gone through the whole everything of him, because he's, he grew up in our same age, grew up in our same same way of thinking.
Uh-huh.
But also, what exactly do the Guardians do now? Are they now sellers? Do they get rid of everyone between the Class A deal mixed with Ortiz? What's the fallout from that? Chris Jimenez, Guardians broadcast crew, he'll join us next right here on Afternoon Drive. I'll be riding solo after that, and we want to get you involved at 216-474-0092. It'll be like an open hour for you guys. We'll just get as many of you guys in here as we possibly can. Obviously, we'll talk a lot about what happened with Class A and everything around the Guardians and that loss last night, G. Bush. I mean, my goodness. You want to talk about deflating.
Kate Smith.
I know. That's the saddest thing.
That's messed up.
Well, we all thought, like, if Class A isn't here, Kate Smith will be able to step up. And now Class A's not here, and Kate Smith just absolutely blew it last night. ERA ballooned up near 4, which is just how that works with relievers. Yeah. It kind of stinks. All right, let's go out and to the fan hotline and talk to our buddy Chris Jimenez, of course, of the Guardians TV, Guardians TV analyst, former big leaguer. He joins us here on 92.3 The Fan. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I've had better days than yesterday, but other than that, I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
We're good. Yesterday was a tough day for the Guardians, the Guardians fans all the way around. There's no denying that one. We'll start with the hard news then. Class A, break down the latest and what you see and just how serious this could be for the Guardians.
Well, I think, seriousness, we've seen there's been a little precedent for. We saw some minor leaguers or some fringe big league guys last like this and had to miss an entire year. So both of these guys are implicated that they had anything to do with it. Wrong. I think you're looking at, the potential loss of both of these guys for upwards of an entire season. So from that aspect, it's extremely scary because Luis Ortiz has really good stuff, was starting to really come on a little bit, and then bam, this comes out of nowhere to all of us at least. And everybody's not thinking any way, shape, or form that anybody else could be connected to this. And then we find out that arguably the most important pitcher on our staff, not named Tanner Bibee, is, being put on the commissioner's exempt list for the same exact thing. So, yeah, this is a huge blow. Least. I'm sure the guys in the day, particular yesterday, with it being such a long day, what will just happen? Because I'm sure, like most of us, are gathering information, and I don't know much is really going to be coming out because there's an active investigation going on. So until anything really, you know, comes down the line, we're really going to be left wondering what in the world just happened.
Yeah, you know, you hear Chris Antonetti and you kind of hear the tone, you know, that he had. And usually the Guardians, have had an aura of, you know, they've already been known as a very respected front office. I think this is one of the first times I've ever heard Chris Antonetti sound like he was answering questions from the Cleveland Browns. I'm like, this is that type of energy I reserved for the Cleveland Browns or maybe even Kobe Altman a couple years ago. But, I mean, have you seen this type of stress on the organization before? I mean, it looks like they're taking this thing very seriously, obviously being without possibly one of their two best pitchers for a whole year or if ever.
Yeah, exactly. That's obviously on the docket. If they, you know, we just saw Pete Rose, you know, pass away, unfortunately, but he had a lifetime ban. And he obviously was guilty of betting on baseball. And there's so much that still has to be found out. And obviously, we're still living in the United States of America where you're innocent until proven guilty. And let's hope on our side that, you know, both of these guys are innocent. And it just happened to be kind of a crazy coincidence. Now, obviously, I have no idea. If that actually happened or if they're what the implication of both of these players are. But I think if you're Chris, this is an extremely serious situation. Now that there's multiple players in your organization that are being accused of something like this, it's a massive deal. And I've heard Chris's comments, and I think truthfully, honestly, I feel like he's handled the situation pretty well because, to my knowledge, he was notified of this as he was driving back from Cooperstown, New York, you know, to go out there for the Hall of Fame induction of our very own Tom Hamilton and CC Sabathia. So I'm sure it caught him off guard slightly in regards to the Emmanuel Clase thing. Now, I did hear some information that, you know, they may have been, you know, knowledgeable that this could have potentially been a situation. And I think I've heard the fact that, you know, they've been very adamant that they were not going to trade Emmanuel Clase, at least publicly. You start to wonder, does this have something to do with it? And I think it's only, you know, right to maybe insinuate that it did. And if it did, I think truly the organization deserves a lot of credit because I know that sounds crazy, but could you imagine if they would have traded Clase? You know, the fans would have gone crazy to begin with. And then something like this comes out, you know, now you're looking at an organization that is looked down upon for a lot of different reasons because did they have information that he was involved in something like this and then still trade the guy knowing that he could be implicated. So I think ultimately the organization has handled this the best they possibly can because to me this is kind of unprecedented. I don't think anybody in our organization's had to handle anything like this, nor should they have.
Yeah, it's at least the classy way to do it. If they would have traded him right. while understanding that something could be coming down and then letting the other team carry that freight after making a big-time move, I don't know any other team in baseball could have made a deal with the Guardians moving forward.
Correct. I think you're absolutely right. And as much as, you know, you probably would have been tempted to be like, well, you know, the fact that we could maybe lose him for a potential, we might as well try to get as much as we possibly can for him. You know, the fact that they chose to take the higher road and not do something like that, I really think is extremely commendable. And I do believe that most, if not every general manager in Major League Baseball would have taken the same exact approach, but you never know. And I do think it shows that our organization is definitely on the up and up and are willing to, you know, maybe sacrifice the here and now until, you know, to not put somebody else out. And I personally appreciate something like that.
Chris Jimenez joining us here on Afternoon Drive, of course, Guardians TV and former Indian. Ken Rosenthal had the report that the Emmanuel Clase news will likely increase the Guardians' possibility of trading Stephen Kwan and Shane Bieber by the end of the week. Do you think that's the smart move after seeing and hearing everything we've found out over the weekend?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know it sucks regardless to have those two guys' names being bandied about in trade, you know, conversations. They have been regardless of where we've been at as an organization. I don't know if it, you know, 100% guarantees both of those guys will be traded, but I definitely think they're fielding a few more calls than they may have initially, you know, had to field in the first place, just knowing that Clase was our best trade chip, truthfully. And I thought if you potentially paired him with somebody like Stephen Kwan, the return you could get back for those two guys in particular would have been astronomical and potentially even organization changing. Now, I think they would have only made the trade if it was truthfully organizational altering. I don't think it was a guarantee that either one of those or all three of those guys get traded, and I still don't necessarily think it is. I think they both have to be overwhelmed. I think Shane Bieber's probably one that's more likely to be traded than Stephen Kwan, just because of not only what Kwan means to the clubhouse, but to the organization, and the fact that, you know, he's still going forward for the next 2 years a part of the organization, has a chance to be a part of it. Whereas Shane Bieber, you know, potentially could be a free agent next offseason. So you might as well, if there is a significant amount of interest, and truthfully, there's been a dearth of starting pitching options on the open market, it makes sense to at least field those calls. But I'm not guaranteeing those guys get traded. I have heard that, you know, they're more willing to do so because those are their best trade chips. And if you're looking to help this outfield or this offense out, I know it sounds crazy to take Stephen Kwan out of it, but potentially, you know, what you could get back could actually benefit you more in the long run.
Let me look at this down the road, because I've been kind of looking at it from a standpoint of, you know, the Guardians organization. You know, say worst case scenario, you do miss Ortiz and you do miss Clase for an entire year. I talked about this a little bit. Is it crazy to think that not only Kwan might be something you look at? If you don't have Clause A as your biggest trade chip, do you think they would ever in a million years think about moving Jose Ramirez?
Absolutely not. to be completely honest with you, I see your point. Truthfully, I really do. I think there would be a bigger revolt than when LeBron left Cleveland the first time, and things would be burning all over the place if they actually were to go through with something like that. I don't think the fan base would think and take too kindly to that. And honestly, I don't think they're really in a position that they have to consider something like that, at least right now moving forward. Now, in 2 or 3 years, you know, Jose's getting older. Maybe you start to see a bit of a decline, and there's really been nothing, you know, to say that he's going to decline in 2 or 3 years. But you look at his age and you could see, you know, how a 32 to 33 year old man could start to maybe decline a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe internally those conversations are happening. But I think Jose signing here when he did, for the amount of money he did, honestly, I think he was probably given some assurances that that wouldn't happen. And in my opinion, I think the organization holds true to that. I just think he's too much a part of the fabric of the organization to really have the rug pulled out on the fan base like that.
Chris, it looked like Shane Bieber had a good outing today. Had a lot of strikeouts in there. I don't know how much of the game you were able to catch or even see, but what is your reaction to at least the box score that Bieber looked good today?
Again, another great step in the right direction. Truthfully, I think at this point, I honestly would not care. Honestly, would not care if he gave up 10 runs, truthfully. I think him getting through his pitch count and feeling healthy is a really, really positive sign. Now, the fact that he's obviously still doing really good and feeling healthy is an even better sign. So, ultimately, this was a huge step in the right direction. Got himself up to about 50 pitches, and I think, you know, the next time he's out, he's probably in the 60 to 65 range. Because after that, we're looking at potential, you know, he could be activated if he's not traded. And hopefully, again, I hope he's not for our sake, because I think, you know, I think he wants to be back in a Guardian uniform. He wouldn't have signed back here if he didn't, truthfully. But I really feel like this was a huge step in the right direction and finally some positive news that this organization desperately needs right now.
Chris, last segment, G. Bush and I were debating. So I landed on Gary Sheffield as my all-time favorite batting stance. As a kid. G. Bush, who'd you settle on? Was it?
I like Mickey Settleton.
Okay. But you also, we started going down.
Jay Buhner,
I think Frank Thomas was one of your big ones to begin with.
I was Frank Thomas.
Kept going down the rabbit hole of it. What was your all-time favorite? Because you made it to the big league, so it's a little bit different, but you had to have, as a kid, done all of these things.
Yes, my two batting stances that I am, you know, just emulated the entire time. Mark McGwire, who's my favorite player of all time. He was an Oakland Athletic. I grew up there. Favorite player of all time, iconic, and then Ken Griffey Jr. I had Ken Griffey Jr., you know, cleats at the time. In high school, my junior and senior year, I had the little bat waggle like he did. I was trying to emulate him. Those two guys, that and Bo Jackson, was my favorite athlete of all time ever. I just think those are two plus Bo Jackson being easy ones to emulate.
The hat backwards from Griffey.
For sure. Just iconic.
The, the aqua blue Mariners jersey. Everybody had
his
kicks.
What's funny about that is, so like, I was listening to somebody over the weekend, and they were talking about how, like, they were talking about Ichiro, but it's like those 90s Mariners teams with Randy Johnson, with A-Rod, with all those guys, and then Griffey, and it's like, we always talk about the 90s Guardians, 90s Indians were the best team that never won, but there's so many teams in the 90s that were just stacked.
Yeah, Tino Martinez. I mean, they had a lot of guys, man. They had a bunch
of guys, and they were really, really talented, both positionally wise and pitching. We forget Jamie Moyer made his career there. One of the longest tenured pitchers. Randy Johnson during that time. I mean, this was a group that it sucks that it didn't happen for those in the Pacific Northwest. And don't think for one second that I wasn't shy or upset that I had to or got the chance to go play for the Mariners and I got to wear that aqua green jersey. That's still one of my favorite ones that I've ever had.
No doubt about it. Chris, we appreciate your insight as always. Very good stuff today, and we'll catch up with you later. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
All right, our buddy Chris Jimenez right there on the Guardians TV. He's always good at breaking things down, but he gave an interesting reaction to what exactly the front office's role within this whole Guardians fiasco should be. We'll break that down and whether or not it does mean there's a fire sale coming as well. It's Afternoon Drive. John DePietro and Garrett Bush with you guys right here on The Fan.